Welcome to Startup Success, the podcast for startup founders and investors. Here, you'll find stories of success from others in the trenches as they work to scale some of the fastest growing startups in the world. Stories that will help you in your own journey. Startup Success starts now.
Hello, thanks for joining us today. We are discussing SaaS revenue and ARR modeling and why it is important. And joining me is John Cochran from SaaS Optics and Debbie Rossler, a fractional CFO from Berkland. John and Debbie both have a lot of experience with predicting and modeling SaaS revenue for startups. John is currently, as we mentioned, with SaaS Optics and was a controller for several SaaS startups. And Debbie is currently a fractional CFO for 5 Berkland SaaS startup clients. So these two can really delve into this topic for us and give us a lot of great insight when, why, how, and stories and insights that they can share from their past work. Debbie, let's start with you. I mean, why is revenue modeling so particularly important for a SaaS startup versus another startup?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, a key aspect is that the recurring nature of SaaS revenue is of significant value. So as compared to other companies that focus on individual transaction sales, SaaS businesses generate a stream of recurring cash flows from customers, which can be retained over long periods of time. And for many companies, those streams can be expanded and grown over time as well. So because of this recurring nature of the revenue, there are unique metrics to take into account when measuring the business and also unique ways of modeling the cash flows of the business that you need to take into account.
Oh, interesting. So the recurring nature really plays a role. Yeah. So John, you've had a lot of experience with this. You know, give the listeners some stories from your past on where this, you know, played an impact and why it was so important for clients and companies that you worked with.
Yeah. So just, you know, building off what Debbie said, the recurring nature, it lends itself to a keyword, predictability. So investors, the board loves to be able to take a look at your MRR, ARR and say, okay, my MRR this month is $1 million. So next month, I know that I'm going to have $1 million in the bank. But as a controller in my past life, I can't tell you how many times the board was expecting it to be $1 million and it would come in as 950,000. And then all of a sudden it would fall back on my plate to explain, well, why did that change? What's the, you know, what shifted from $1 million to 950,000, all of a sudden I would be caught scrambling with 8 other members on my finance team trying to explain just a simple fluctuation. And it just winds up being really, really hard to do that. So, well, I know that we'll dive into some war stories here as to, you know, why that is so hard. But that's the bread and butter of that. It's predictability, and people expect MRR lends itself to helping you plan for the future of the business because you should be able to model out the future knowing those numbers.
Got it. That does sound like it adds a stress, but also, you know, it could also add some insight for you. Debbie, what have you seen?
So one of the key factors of doing SaaS revenue model is helping companies to determine their cash runway. So one of the interesting aspects of SaaS businesses is that there's a very wide range of approaches for how companies bill and collect for their services. Some companies are able to bill annually in advance for their services, and that's a fantastic model because it essentially means that you're using customer cash to finance your startup as they're paying for the services before you've delivered anything to them. Compare, for example, that to a consumer product manufacturer that sources products internationally, sells to large retailers. A company like that would have long timelines for sourcing raw material purchases, then they do the manufacturing, warehousing, logistics, timelines to actually get paid by retail customers, many of whom try to stretch out their payment terms for really extended periods of time. And so considering that full time frame, consumer product companies can easily have their capital tied up for 6 or 12 months or even more before they get cash in the door. And then you compare that against a SaaS model where you're actually getting paid before you even provide the service. So which do you think is a better model from a cash flow standpoint, getting paid in advance before providing service or having cash tied up for 12 months until you get a return? It's pretty clear.
Right.
That SaaS
yes.
Is a really, really great model.
That's a great benefit. I like the way you explain that.
Yeah. And then when you look at that whole upfront model, what you can see, though, is that there's a lot of variability between different SaaS companies. So many SaaS companies are able to bill annually in advance, but there are different models. So some will bill quarterly or monthly upfront. And then there are some SaaS companies that aren't able to bill in advance and still bill after the fact, maybe monthly or quarterly. That's called billing in arrears. And there's also a really wide range of collections timeframes. So some companies process their transactions via credit card, get paid right away. Other companies, you know, bill their customers and can take 15, 30, 60, or even 90 days to collect. So when you look at these wide ranges of billing and collections practices in terms of whether you're billing in advance or after the fact and how long it takes to collect, what you'll see is that the cash flow among SaaS companies can vary significantly. And two companies with the same levels of ARR or annual recurring revenue can have wildly different cash flows. And that's why, you know, revenue modeling is really critical for businesses, because when you take into account these different cash collection timeframes, what you'll see is that they have very different cash runways, and that will help the companies to understand the timeframes for being able to raise their next round of capital.
Wow, I've never looked at it that way, where that the cash collection flow and timeframes and the variability can cause so much differences between SaaS startups. And that must, you know, cause it to be more difficult. So John, to that point, I mean, do you have a, you know, war story or, you know, example you can share of that when you experienced that with a client or a company that you were working with?
Yeah, I think the power, a good example of that was in a prior life, I had rebuilt one of our company's financial models. So we would build out a 5-year forecast, and it's really hard. Debbie, I'm sure you can appreciate, it's near impossible to accurately predict years 2 through 5. So you really kind of know what year one is going to be, maybe, if you're lucky. But in this meeting, I remember sitting down and the CEO at the time, you know, we had this fancy model and we were assuming we were, you know, let's just throw out a number that we were going to grow 50% this next year. But in the meeting, the CEO went, well, what if instead of growing 50%, we only grow 40%? And so, you know, our model at that point was sophisticated enough that we could see the ripple through effects to cash. And all of a sudden, we realized if we only grow 40% this year, we're going to run out of cash by November. And we're potentially, you know, we're not going to be able to hire those additional 10 to 15 headcount that we were planning for just by missing, you know, our forecast by about 10%. So something that seems so small can have a really big ripple through effect if you don't get it right. That was a good example of trying, you know, it's Debbie, you were alluding to, even though a company has the same ARR, if you have different billing terms, that ripples through to your cash, which then the worst case scenario. Now, thankfully, I'm early enough in my career that I have not been a part of a company that, let's just take that example where we potentially would have ran out of cash in November. You know, we get to July and all of a sudden we realize we need to scramble because we got 2 to 3 months to solve this leaky bucket of cash. But I've heard war stories from other CFOs at different companies, and they've told it with a somber attitude, saying, I was the last person in the office calling, you know, all of our creditors and saying, look, I understand that we owe you $50,000. I can only pay you $10,000. If you can hold firm on the $50,000, but then you can get in line and wait for the bankruptcy to go through. And that's, you know, a worst case scenario. And you know, there's the other side if you grow to 60%, but the stakes are pretty high for getting those numbers right.
Wow, I think that conveys really well the importance of doing this, of going through the exercise of the modeling and, you know, why the direct impact it has on cash, which is so critical for scaling. Debbie, do you have an example like that of a company that you've worked with where their collections, you know, played a big impact on their cash runway?
Yeah, actually, I've had a SaaS client that had a seasonal business model, and they really had some unique aspects to the way that their cash flows came into the business throughout the year. So this company actually was selling new contracts throughout the year, but product launches actually only happened 2 times a year based on the company's seasonality. So while their contracted ARR was growing steadily throughout the year, the implementations only happened 2 times per year. And as a result of the discrepancy, the company is actually tracking 2 separate ARR metrics. One of the metrics is contracted ARR, and the other is live ARR. But what you can see is that the company is only billing for its services at the time of product launch, and they're going to be billing annually in advance. So basically what ends up happening is they're building up contracted revenue throughout the year, but then there's sort of two big chunky periods where they go live, they send out their invoices, and then sort of generally within 30 days, they're collecting payments on those. So you basically see sort of twice a year where they have big cash inflows, and the rest of the year, there's really no cash inflows, and they're just sort of, you know, bleeding cash throughout the year. And so, you know, for a company like this, you know, correctly modeling the timing of these seasonal cash flows are really critical for understanding their cash runway. You can't look at a company like this and say, what's their annual or even their quarterly cash flow and get a full picture, because really the monthly timing, in fact, does matter. And for a company like that, you know, understanding when those cash flows come in and modeling that down to a monthly period makes you understand, you know, are you going to be in a period in between when the collections come in? Do you need to think about raising incremental capital to sort of cover for those periods where you're not having the cash flow?
That's an interesting example, because you've got the SaaS nature of the business coupled with the seasonal aspect. Makes it very difficult. Wow. Yeah. Interesting. I never thought about those could both play a role. John, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you have something like that you could share an example of, along with the SaaS complexities of recurring revenue, you know, there was something else in addition to it that made it particularly difficult?
Yeah, I think the seasonality piece of it, you know, I've been fortunate where a lot of the businesses that I've worked in have not had a ton of seasonality. But to Debbie's point, yeah, making sure that the seasonality is factored into everything.
I mean,
it's everything, but I have been a part of seeing examples where people did not take into account the delay between the day that you send the invoice and when you're going to collect the cash and how that is going to impact your cash runway. But I don't know how much we want to dive into that. I know this, I'm like thinking out loud here.
No, I mean, that's an interesting point. And I think, you know, I could see where a lot of people, founders and their teams get that can trip them up. You know,
because yeah, I think it's so maybe just diving into that a little bit. You know, one of the stories that I was talking about with an old CFO that I used to work with was when he came into the business and he took over the financial model for everybody, they would assume that there's a couple things going on. The CEO had budgeted 10 additional headcount for the next year, but he had just layered them all in, assuming, okay, well, on January 1, I'm going to have 10 headcount. It didn't take into account that, okay, throughout the year, I'm going to layer in the headcount. So I don't actually need to account for all that cash going out in January. It's going to be, it'll take place over time. But the same piece was true with how they were modeling the revenue side of things. You can't just assume that on January 1, all of a sudden your ARR is going to go from 10 million to say 15 million or whatever it might be. I think a lot of time, a big thing that can trip companies up is they'll model out their ARR and then their billings, and they assume that everything takes place in the same month, but often there's a disconnect between the two of those. So I bill my client in January, client might pay me 30 days later, 45 days later, 60 days later. And if you're not accounting for that and how you're modeling things out, you could find yourself in a really difficult position again. You know, I feel like I'm the bearer of bad news on these things, saying watch out for all these pitfalls.
I think that's an excellent point, because just personally, I know how I pay bills to the companies that I use, you know, with Berkland. They'll send me an invoice. It might not get paid right away just because of the timing of things. So if you're making assumptions like that, you know, and a bunch of different clients are paying at different times, it has a real impact. That's a pain point for sure.
Yeah, Debbie, it sounds like you've got some personal experience helping companies deal with this exact problem.
Oh, yeah. Collections is a really critical thing among startups. And what I've found in particular is in working with startups that are working with large enterprise customers are often very surprised about how challenging it can be to collect on their invoices, and in particular for this first invoice. Because a lot of times when startups are selling to enterprises, there's a whole process to get, you know, purchase orders in and collect, you know, purchase orders approved, that there's a lot of friction to get that initially set up. And I have a client that, you know, is working with Fortune 500 or even Fortune 100 companies, where the initial setup for that first invoice can take easily 60 to 90 days. And so whereas, you know, initially you might have been forecasting to get a collection within 30 days, the reality has been quite different from that. A lot of times once you're in their system, and you know, a lot of these companies have very complicated vendor management systems that you have to get set up in. And a lot of times once you're set up, your second invoice is much more timely, but the first invoice, you gotta take into account particularly working with large enterprises, those long timeframes. Another thing I've seen also, particularly in the COVID landscape, although this seems to be easing up, is that initially when COVID hit, a lot of large companies were using their purchasing power as a way to sort of flux and say, you know, we need to conserve our cash, we're going to pay you slower. And I had clients who had 30-day payment terms with some of their customers, where their customers reached out to them and said, you know what, we're going to start paying you based on 90 days.
Wow, that seems so unfair.
It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. And
but you know, what can
you
do?
The good news is that seems to have let up. But you know, it was shocking to me that these sort of large, deep-pocketed companies, which theoretically have more options to be able to fund their working capital, were squeezing the little guys, the startups. But I did see that happening. And there's companies that, luckily in the time frame of COVID, a lot of those companies were sort of had the backstop of PPP loans and other things to help them get through those cash crunches. But it can be an issue where large companies can really push on the startups in terms of how long it takes for them to pay. And startups yep. really rely on, you know, those logos and, you know, in terms of having, you know, that large customers obviously help them build their business. It's important to have them, but they don't always have the power to get those customers to pay as quickly.
And then it impacts their entire model and
Absolutely.
What they've planned.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So I, you know, as a general rule, when I'm forecasting cash flows, even if the company's policy is to have 30-day collections terms, I often model assuming 60 days just to be somewhat conservative. So
That's
that on
smart.
Average, some may come in on time or earlier and some may be late, but at least that way you're not caught unaware.
Oh, that's a great kind of tip to point out. Because
yeah.
I'm sure, seriously, I mean, if I was the startup founder, I would want to take that approach, right? Better to be surprised with finding that all your customers are paying on time and have your model show that than the other way. Interesting. Any other pain points you want to address, Debbie?
Yeah, I would say just overall among SaaS companies, one of the pain points I see at the earliest stage is that when companies are first getting set up, they don't really correctly measure their SaaS metrics, such as ARR. So many of these companies, they start at their initial customers, they're sort of getting cash flows in. They're really looking at revenue only based on cash collections, but they're not doing anything to correctly measure revenue accrual accounting. And then they're also not correctly measuring their annual recurring revenue. So, you know, having this cash collections focus can make it really difficult for startups to communicate their business model and the company story to investors. So, like, you know, as we were talking about before, one of the key benefits, business model benefits of a SaaS company is the recurring nature of the revenue. And investors really want to understand what portion of their revenue is the recurring portion. A lot of companies will have initial setup or one-time professional services fees, and that'll be part of their cash collections. But really, you know, the part of the revenue that provides the most value is the recurring nature, the revenue that you're going to be getting year after year after year. And you want to be able to split out what portion of your revenue is recurring and what does that look like on an annualized basis. You also need to be able to look at how that revenue, that recurring revenue, is growing over time. So how much new business are you adding each month from new logos? What's your net retention of your existing business? So for example, how well are you retaining existing customers? And what kind of job are you doing at driving expansion revenue in that existing customer base over time? On a lot of occasions, you know, one of the pain points I've seen is that I've seen investors express a lot of frustration at companies that aren't correctly tracking their ARR metrics in a way that clearly breaks out this growth over time. And the impact to startups is that they can lose credibility with investors because they're not demonstrating a good understanding of their business model, really the critical aspect of their business model being that recurring revenue. And in doing that, they're not, you know, fully communicating the value of this revenue and therefore could end up undervaluing the company and what its prospects are. And what I've seen is that this is something that really could significantly hurt a company's potential to effectively raise venture capital.
And obviously that's critical. And you can see on the investor's point of view why they would want that clarity, because you've very well explained the difference between the recurring portion versus the other. I mean, John, have you seen that as well? You know,
that
they're not doing it correctly and then...
Oh yeah, it's so I would say the number one thing that we help, you know, especially at SaaS Optics, the thing that we help people with is this confusion that, you know, Debbie was alluding to, where they'll mistakenly record, you know, I billed my customer $12,000 in January for a 1 year term, and they'll be recording that as their revenue in January, but really it needs to be stretched out and they don't have a good way to do that. So we help them with that. And you know, Debbie, you were getting right into a really good point. I remember, you know, I started my career in public accounting. And so everything, my whole world just revolved around GAAP revenue and GAAP compliant financial statements and everything that was looking backward in history. And then I joined a startup and they kept dropping these terms, MRR and ARR and cohorts and all these things I had never heard of before, because they're not, they're really, there are some standards, but it's not regulated like GAAP metrics are. And it, there can be some variation. And I remember just being incredibly confused, because all the investors wanted to hear about and the board wanted to hear about and the executives wanted to hear about were these metrics to help predict where's the company going to be in 1 year, 2 year, 3 years from now. So there can be a ton of confusion, but the stakes, I remember sitting in an office, and going back to the very first example I had, sitting in my office at a prior company and using this example of, you know, we had $1 million of MRR last month, and so revenue this month should be $1 million plus our new business, right? Sounds easy. But it wasn't that. There was variation in that. And I had to try and explain to the executives why that variation was taking place. But we were dealing with thousands of customers that we had to understand what's the movement in each one of those customers and how does that factor into the overall picture. And they want a one sentence line or a two sentence line to explain that. And I remember the CFO looking at me saying, if we can't explain this simply in a couple sentences, our credibility to our investors is just gone. And they will find somebody else who can do this, because that's what the stakes are. You need to be able to explain, hey, what's the movement across all of my customers, and explain it simply. But it's not a simple problem. And there's a lot of confusion, and there are a lot of different terms, and there are a lot of things to account for. The flip side of that, if you get it right, it's incredibly rewarding and incredibly empowering. And Debbie, you were alluding, if you get that right, then all of a sudden you now have the metrics to back up the story that you're telling about your business. And now you have an incredible toolkit to go and raise new funds if you want to fuel the growth of your business. Getting it right is everything, because then you can plan effectively, you can raise funds effectively, and then you get into the fun part of startups that everybody loves to talk about, of, you know, this company is going from Series A to Series F and we're going to the moon, we're on a rocket ship. But you'll never get there if you can't get these basics right.
I really like how you phrase that, John, get it right, because I think that's what, you know, we're all trying to accomplish here, right? Is giving some knowledge on how to do that. And just this conversation has shown why that's so important. So Debbie, getting it right, when do you start then? Because when you start is going to be critical to getting it right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you start from the very, very beginning. So in terms of doing actual revenue modeling, I think you do it before you even have revenue. Because really, by building a revenue model, a company can validate that the company has the potential to deliver on the growth objectives. And this revenue model also enables you to understand the company's unit economics. So you can validate the pricing strategy, and you can confirm that a company can build a profitable and sustainable business over time. In terms of tracking ARR metrics and doing correct revenue recognition, I think that starts on day one, the first time that you begin making sales to customers. You want to get that from the beginning, because the sooner you have that, the sooner you're able to communicate that story to investors and understand your business model and be able to track and manage your business. So, you know, I say this is something you do before you start thinking about this, before you even generate revenue, and then you implement it from day one of revenue generation.
Makes perfect sense. So that being said, John and Debbie, I know you both wrote an ebook about this. So John, you know, to kind of build that foundation for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about the ebook?
Yeah, we just, like we've been talking about on the podcast, this stuff is complicated. And oftentimes you just need somebody to help you get started or have the basics. You know, like I was saying earlier, going from my GAAP world, my regulated, very controlled environment, to this new world of analytics and metrics and how do we show where the business is going to go. You just need somebody to kind of give you a, hey, here's the ABCs, or here's steps 1 through 5 on how to do this model, and here's what you need to be thinking about. So that's a little bit of what we dive into in the ebook. You know, we give you some high level bullet points of, here are the things that you need to be thinking about. Here are a couple different ways that you could tackle these problems. And hopefully that was one thing I always found valuable, was somebody who could just give me the high level points. This is what you need to be thinking about. That's what we dive into in the ebook.
Excellent. So it kind of puts on the radar what you should be thinking about and questions you should be asking, you know, your CFO or the controller or whoever is working with you, VP of finance on your modeling.
Yeah, exactly. There are multiple ways to build a financial model for a company. Sometimes you want to do it from the tops down or a bottoms up model. And you may hear those terms thrown around. Tops down really means, hey, we're starting at the very highest number that you can get to. You know, are we going from 10 million to 15 million? And bottoms up is a little bit more granular. You start at the individual units. We want to sell 1,000 units this year for $5 each. And that then ripples up to that top line number. And in the ebook, we dive into how can you set up a structured and what do you need to be thinking about with those two ways of modeling.
Oh, great. So, Debbie, you address, can you repeat the two ways for our listeners, the two approaches you outline?
Yeah. So basically, the ebook dives into two specific approaches for SaaS revenue modeling. One is a tops-down approach, which is based on historical trend lines and leveraging that to do future projections. And the second approach is a bottoms-up model, which is based on identifying revenue drivers. That can often include the sales and marketing funnel, product line and pricing, expected distribution of new customers between products. And you basically take these revenue models, build assumptions out over time on these drivers, and use that to build out a revenue forecast.
Excellent. So I know this ebook is available both at the SaaS Optics website and the Berklin website. So, John, before we go, give us a little info about SaaS Optics and your role there and how listeners can reach you if they want more information.
Yeah. So my role at SaaS Optics, I'm our director of product management. And like we were talking about earlier, in a past life, I was actually an operator at a company. I was a controller at a business. So the great thing about SaaS Optics is all the software and solutions that we're working on here, they provide solutions to all the problems that I was dealing with when I was trying to pull together these financial reports for executives and investors. And SaaS Optics really helps B2B SaaS subscription businesses with their financial operations. The exciting thing for me about SaaS Optics and what we're able to help people with is, like I was saying, in my old GAAP world, there's a way to pull together GAAP financial metrics, but then you also need a tool to help you deal with the non-financial metrics. How can you report on what your billings are going to be? How can you report on your ARR and your MRR? There are a lot of solutions on the market that will tell you, hey, we can help you with ARR, MRR, but it's not like we were talking about earlier. They just don't quite get it right. The exciting thing about SaaS Optics is I believe that we do get it right, and we do it all on a single platform. And it's one of it's the reason I joined this company. I saw what we were doing and I saw the value, and I wish that I had this at my prior company. I wish that I had a single tool that I could go to help me with my analytic modeling, my revenue modeling, and just have one tool to do it all with. And so that's really what we help people with. We help people with their financial operations, getting it right for B2B SaaS subscription businesses.
Sounds like a great solution. Thank you. And what's your URL, your website URL? Just SaaSOptics.com?
SaaSOptics.com.
Okay, yeah. Great. And excellent. And then Debbie, would you mind sharing a little bit about Berklin and your role there?
Yes. So I work as a CFO consultant with Berklin, and I currently serve as fractional CFO for 5 SaaS startups. I've been with the firm for about 6 years, and I've had a lot of experience working with SaaS startups to build out their revenue and ARR models. So some of the things that we've been talking about today, I'm currently doing with several of my clients, you know, in real time. I've spent my whole career working in finance. I initially started in investment banking and private equity, and then later moved into corporate financial planning and analysis. And so our firm Berklin provides internal finance support to venture-backed startups. We work with companies between the seed and series C stages. The support includes part-time CFO support, as well as bookkeeping, accounting, tax, and HR. We have a team of 30 CFOs, and we actually support over 300 startups throughout the United States. If you want to get in touch with me, you can contact me at hello@berklinassociates.com. And our website is Berklin Associates. It's B-U-R-K-L-A-N-D associates.com. And then any of the information that you want about the ebook, you can actually find on our Berklin website. If you go to the SAS Toolkit section of our website, you'll be able to find our ebook there.
Thanks, Debbie. You know, John and Debbie, it was great having you on the podcast. I think the listeners got really good idea of why this is so important and why it's so unique and challenging, but can also be, you know, a real advantage for SaaS startups if done correctly. I think you both really outlined that very well. And I think your ebook sounds like an excellent tool to get more information about that and how to start having those conversations at your startup to make sure that you don't get caught in some of these stories that you shared, especially you, John, of these worst case scenarios. So I think this was a really great conversation. Definitely worth checking out SaaS Optics, what they're offering, and the ebook in Berklin. And thank you both so much for your time today. This was great.
You've been listening to Startup Success. To make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Like what you hear? Tap the number of stars you think the show deserves in Apple Podcasts. For more tools and resources for your own startup success, check out berklandassociates.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.